the meeting minutes for August 4th and October 29th, 2020. The minutes have been distributed to everyone. Does anyone have any changes or amendments to either of those dates, meeting minutes?
No.
Hearing none, I'll take a motion to approve the minutes for the August 4th and August 29th meetings.
That is John Grassley.
Motion by Member Graziano, second by Chairman Sample. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The minutes are adopted. Item 3, consideration of October year-to-date financial statements. Jill?
Hi, everybody. So what you've got in front of you are the October 2020 financial reports. I just want to bring to your attention, probably on the bottom right side of the page 1, where it shows the year-to-date and the 2020 total information. You'll see that in the highlighted area, the year-to-date, it's showing that we had budgeted through October about approximately a $2 million loss, which we had, by changing our holdback rate, we are accounting for that. In reality, at this point in time, as of the end of October, we only had approximately $1 million loss, so we're a little bit ahead of what we had budgeted. We're still $1 million behind what we had last year at this time, but we're in good shape as far as the holdback is concerned. If you go to the 2020 total, where we're estimating, based on our budget, what we're going to take in for November and December, you'll see that we're showing a $1.4 million loss. And if you look on the very bottom of the screen, you'll see at the bottom of that page, you'll see at that point in time, we will have a holdback of about $3 million. So it looks, if you look at this financial statement, you'll see it'll look like we'll be able to pay back about 50% of that holdback amount. Because those amounts are the November and December are budgeted amounts, and they were based on the information we had at the time, I went through and kind of updated for November and December to see where I thought we would really stand. We've got a couple of adjustments that I'm taking into account because the VLT monies are coming back in. I'm figuring we're going to have some additional recapture that we haven't taken in of around $600,000. Additional expenses that we're looking at is we've got about a $50,000 adjustment that we need to make an additional expense for the pension, and we've got a bad debt for the Catskill money that we're going to have to reserve against, which is about $33,000. And so if I look at it based on taking November and December a little bit more accurate estimate of what we're going to take in, I'm thinking that we might end up a bit better than what we're looking at here, and I'm almost thinking that we might be able to get really close to a total 10% holdback for the year for the awards. That's really kind of optimistic. Maybe it would be more like an 85%, but I think it's going to be a lot better than that 50% that we're estimating. So, you know, that again is assuming that the VLTs continue, that we don't have another pause or shut down, you know, because of the way things are, the direction that things are going. But, you know, we're definitely in pretty good shape with the 50% holdback, and we're going to be able to pay back a substantial portion of that. The only other thing that maybe I want to bring to your attention is the last page of the financial reports for October, where it's showing our accounts receivable aging. And you'll see, you know, a lot of the organizations are paying very slow. We are getting money back. And the important thing is the two biggest cash sources that we have, NYRA and Resorts World, are paying on a timely manner. So if you look at our 60 to over 90 days here, it's at about 32%. If I pull out a big portion of that is the Catskill OTB, which even though we've reserved against it, is still showing on this report. If I take that out, it's a little bit closer to 25%. So we are working on getting those numbers down so that, you know, the payments are coming in more timely, but it's a difficult time for everybody, and, you know, cash is important. Any questions? That's all I really wanted to bring to your attention, but does anybody have any questions on the financial report?
Phil, this is Bill. Jeff.
Yes, Jeff?
Sorry, Bill.
That's all right.
For the I just want to make a statement here relating to the OTBs that are over 90 days. By law, they're required to pay the fund quarterly. So are we saying that several of these OTBs are out of accordance with the law?
Yes. Catskill is paying slow. Capital OTB is actually paying well. Instead of paying, they used to pay us after the 90 days, but now what they're doing is sending us like $10,000-$15,000 a week, so they're managing to stay pretty current. Nassau is, when they closed, they stopped paying, so they were around 6 months behind when they started making repayments. And they're paying, but they're not paying. As you can see, that they're over 90 days is still a substantial, because they were paying on the lower dollar amounts, and now that they're but they're coming back. Suffolk is okay. Western is slow as well. So you know, Nassau, Western, Catskill are probably the three that are not paying in accordance to the statutory requirements.
Jill, any Bill, the big current Bill. Question is, does it looks like, if I got this right, that in terms of the 100% of awards, we are giving out 50, and it looks like at the end of the, you know, next year, once everything is been completely audited and stuff, that approximately another, what would be 25%, would be sent out for a grand total aggregate of 75% of awards. Is that ballpark the way you see it?
I think it's actually going to be a little better. I would say if you look at the total awards for 2020 at 100%, I think that we're going to be a little bit closer to maybe 85%, I guess would be a good number, so probably a little better than what, you know, the 75, but a little bit of it depends. The main number that I don't know, and I'm not going to have until January, is the OPEB adjustment that we need to make at the end of the year. You know, I don't know what that's going to be. I'm kind of guessing it's not going to change significantly, but I don't know for sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Jill? We'll move on to number four, consideration of administrative spending above $5,000. Jill?
The only one that we have here is the Tech 2 agreement, and that is the last year of a five-year RFP that we sent out. The dollar amount doesn't change from the previous years. It's $11,400. Might change a little bit depending on the number of pieces of, you know, because it's based somewhat on the number of pieces of equipment that they're covering you for. But that's what I'm asking for approval to pay it for 2021. That's over the $5,000. And it's for 11.4, it's with Tech 2.
And remind us again what they provide.
They do the maintenance on our hardware systems, so they do our backups. They make sure that our computers, the laptops and desktops all have the protections, the patches and virus protections and then we can call them should we have any questions or problems getting into our system. And I have to say they've been really good with this time whenever we all had to go remote in a short period of time. You know, they helped us set up so that we could work from home. And they're pretty easy to work with.
Good to hear. Any other questions for Jill on the administrative spending? And I'll have a motion to approve the payment to Tech 2.
So moved.
Motion by Member Burke. Second?
Second. John Graziano.
Second by Member Graziano. Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Next is the review of purse enrichment use by Finger Lakes. Jill, again.
Okay, this one is, it's hard to compare it because it's very different this year to last year. But I think what I wanted to just show everybody is on page one of this document, the Finger Lakes handle and purse comparison, which is on the left-hand side, does show that the average, even though there were, 71 or 61% less days of racing, but the average daily average daily handle actually increased by 17%. So even though it wasn't as, the handle didn't increase in direct comparison to the number of days racing that decreased or something, there was, an increase. If you look at the second one, the average purse did decrease, but only very insignificantly, by 1%. You can't really look at the right-hand side. It shows the purse enrichment that we paid, which was the $400, which was down from $600 the year before, and then the owner awards, which we were looking at to try to compare that because of the changes that we made in the structure of what the fund was contributing. But because there were so many less races, obviously, the owner awards, even though there were less restricted races, the dollar amount that we paid in owner awards were less. Page two just kind of shows the total races that were held at Finger Lakes and what type of races they were and the change in the prior year. And again, everything decreased because they had, almost 600 less races. But you can see, I highlighted the change for the races that the fund contributed purse enrichment for, and you will see that the field size for those races did increase. I guess you would expect that because there were less races held, but it's still a plus. There's none of those areas did decrease. And that's all I really have. It's really just for everybody's review and maybe to talk about next year when we start talking about purses again. Does anybody have any other questions on this? Or
hey, thank you, Jill.
You're welcome.
Item is review and consideration of pass-around approval of amended the Lakes Purse Enrichment Agreement. Tracy?
Yes, back in October, the board approved in a pass-around vote the ability of Finger Lakes to change our agreement with them such that they could use $120,000 of purse enrichment money, which wasn't being used because there were fewer days of racing and fewer races. We gave them approval to use up to $120,000 of that amount to add to their futurity purses, such that they would have $240,000 to offer in their two-year-old races. It was approved unanimously in the pass-around vote, but we always like to put these things in front of the board again at a public forum. for your review and approval.
Any questions regarding the amendment? We'll take a motion to approve the amendment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Dr. Wilmot, second by, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize the voice.
John.
Yes, good.
Second by Member Graziano. Any further discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Next item is the NYRA agreement. Dr. Wilmot?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tracy and Jill, of course, have worked hard on this, and we think it's a great spend for the ad promo, particularly because NYRA does a great job and gets national exposure for our program. So with that said, we definitely are in the process of renewing it. There's been a little bit of a hold up in the back and forth of some of the lawyer talk. So I had suggested a while ago that in view of the COVID situation, there had not previously been any language in the contract to account for any stoppage in racing. So Kyle has come up with some language, and NYRA has been back and forth on it. So I think it's just about nailed down, the whack-a-mole, that part of it. But that aside, my feeling is that it's a good contract. It's a very, very similar to the previous years. One of the changes they did make at our request, we got some credit, of course, from last year's stoppage of racing, but we're going to do installment payments this year instead of lump sum. Kyle or Joe or Tracy, would you like to make a comment since we've all worked on this?
I think the very last thing that is a holdup was just some language about insurance protection. So this morning, Jill was able to find our insurance information. We've passed that along to NYRA so their risk management people can look at it. And then, Kyle, you can just add your thoughts on, can we approve this or with the proviso that our attorney signs off on the final language.
Kyle?
Hi.
Sorry, I had it on mute. I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I had it on mute because I was coughing so much. So there was a term sheet. There was a term sheet that we looked at and basically came back with some language dealing with what's generally known as the force majeure provision, which basically says that if something unexpected happened, but we also included COVID in there, that the fund would not have to perform under the agreement. They have, my understanding is that they are comfortable with that language that I gave them. They sent over a draft contract which included that language, and I just marked it up. I gave I call it a very light markup of their agreement, where basically there were certain provisions that were unilateral. You know, NYRA has the right to do this, NYRA has the right to do that, which really should have been mutual. And so I just simply, noted in the document that these provisions need to be mutual. And so I don't expect any problems. I think it's my understanding, Tracy and Jill, is that it's still with legal at NYRA, looking at my very minor comments, and so assuming that they come back and that there's no showstoppers, I think that we'll have an agreement. And I think what this board can do, obviously it's up to you, but I think what the board can do is approve the agreement, subject to legal counsel approval of the final contract.
Is there a timing issue here, Kyle? Does this have to get done by a certain time?
Well, I would defer to Dr. Wilmot on that. It's just that we're not going to convene again until
March,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was hoping that we'd be able to finalize it by year's end, just to be neat and clean. But in truth, there's not a whole lot of stuff that goes on in January. Jeff, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't see any reason why we wouldn't approve this exactly as Kyle stated.
Yeah.
So that's the calendar year against it.
Go ahead and approve it today, subject to council signing off on it.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. With the intent of it starting beginning of the year, I don't see why everything that Kyle is talking about with NIRA wouldn't be done in the next 14 days or before the year is over. So,
yeah, I mean that's how I see it too. I think we should. My opinion is we should approve it, and you know, if they're slow, Tracy and Kyle can rattle their cage to get the thing back. It's gone back and forth enough that there's really, as Kyle said, there's apparently no showstoppers. You know, there's a word here and there. You're just dealing with lawyer time sometimes. So, anyway, but I agree with Jeff.
Does anybody have any questions about the agreement? Bill, do you want to put that in the form of a motion?
Yes. I propose that the fund board approves the NIRA contract as it currently stands, with the understanding that a final sign-off by Kyle will make it completely enforced, and that our aim is to have that by year's end. So that's my proposal.
Thank you.
And motion, and perhaps that motion should delegate to Tracy or Jill the authority to sign the contract.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't think that's necessary, Kyle. I'd like to see the agreement. I mean, I would like to see the final agreement before I think we should delegate that authority. I think we should at least have a chance to look at it.
Oh, fair enough. Sure.
Okay, the motion by Dr. Wilmot. Is there a second?
John Graziano.
Second by Member Graziano. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion carries. Next item is consideration of allowing breeder awards to be paid in full. Jeff?
Okay, I do have an item for new business, so I just wanted to note that before I forget about it, which is my successor in my position at NYTB, which he is on this call as well. But we'll talk about that in new business. I just wanted to mention it before I forget. So let me talk about item 8, which is the Breeders' Awards to be paid in full. This relates to what we've done for literally the last 9 or 10 years with the change in law that allows the fund to distribute up to the cap or ceiling 65%, which is the statutory cap of its revenue to Breeders' Awards. And if you remember, just to give a quick history lesson, because it'll be the last time I'll be able to give you a history lesson on this. A long, long time ago, 9 or 10 years ago, the fund could not pay beyond 50% of its revenue to Breeders' Awards. So what was and that was right when the growth of this program was starting. And what happened was is that the fund literally was not paying its advertised rates because we couldn't under the statute, right? So we had enough money, but we couldn't actually distribute it. So NYTB a long time ago changed the law to increase that threshold or cap from 50% to 65%. It requires a vote of this board every year to do so. We've changed that law every year, going back almost a decade. It was changed again for this year as well. And that is the highest level recap of that situation. So the motion would be to, and this is the same motion that this board has carried forward for that long of time, to allow the fund to distribute Breeders' Awards in full based on year-end revenue for the fund.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff on the motion? So, Jeff, that would be a motion to allow the Breeder Awards to be paid in full, correct?
Correct, correct.
Motion by Member Canizzo. Any second?
Second.
And that was?
Dr. Wilmot.
Dr. Wilmot, thank you. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Next item is an update on the Zweig Fund by Dr. Wilmot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last month, the Zweig Committee met remotely, based at Cornell, and the biggest difference from years past, there's great scientific projects put forth. Usually we have enough money to approve about half of them. This year was different. We were only able to approve two of the proposals, and that's just COVID time. So I wanted everybody to know that. The second point I wanted to make was that in terms of projected income for the Zweig Committee for fiscal year 21, the fund's projected share is about $200,000. In most years, it would be in the high 300s, so it's close to 400. And it's possible that it'll be more than 200, but Joel is conservative, and that's a good thing. The big surprise, though, is that the standardbred side of the equation for funding the Zweig projects usually comes in pretty close to the thoroughbred side, maybe just a tad less. However, for 2021, the projection for the harness side is only $36,450. So they're having more trouble with COVID than the thoroughbreds are. So just wanted everybody to know that. Those are really the two takeaways.
Thank you, Doctor. Any questions for Dr. Wilmot about this Zweig Fund? Thank you very much. The next item is the 2021 meeting dates. They were sent out to you, I believe, yesterday. If anyone has any problem with those dates, let Tracy know, and we'll see if we can make an adjustment. But those will be the meeting dates, unless someone has a problem with them. We're moving on to new business. Jeff?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. So this is my last fund board meeting officially. The fund will be receiving a letter from NYPB when they address the replacement of this appointment on the board, which by statute is either the executive director or the president of the association. I believe they intend on addressing this next week. So I just wanted to, of course, thank everyone for all of your partnership and time and effort, and all of the things you've done to, you know, help me and help the association. In saying that, I'm also very happy to announce that yesterday NYTB formally announced and released the person who is replacing me at NYTB, who is on this call. His name is Naja Thompson. He comes to NYTB from NYRA. He's been in our industry for a decade. I just wanted to simply introduce him to you guys. That he's going to be working, obviously, with the fund staff and perhaps with some of you. So I thought it was appropriate, given the timing, to do that. So, Naja, if you are, hopefully you are on the call, feel free to say hello, I guess, to the fund board.
Thanks, Jeff. Again, hi to everybody. It'd be a pleasure to work with everyone on this board. Always supportive of the New York Breds and the fund and the program. and excited to join everybody and participate.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Major.
Very much. I look forward to meeting you in person, as we all do. Hopefully, our next meeting we'll be able to get together in person. Keep our fingers crossed. And thank you, Jeff, you know, on behalf of the entire board. I mean, your contribution has been tremendous, and not only to the board, but to me personally, in educating me and bringing me up to speed on everything that had gone on in the history of the organization. And, your contribution has been tremendous. And feel free to call on us anytime we can be helpful to you. Please attend any meetings that you want to attend. If there's anything we could do to help you with Myra, just let us know.
I greatly appreciate that. And I can tell you that my new assignment and mission, there's certainly going to be things that are going to be mutually beneficial for our industry that I'm going to be working on. So I fully intend on utilizing these relationships and, who knows, participating in meetings and whatnot that are of importance to us all. So thank you again.
Jeff, I just want to add my personal thanks as well, particularly in the last few months when we had such a small promotion budget. The way the NYTV stepped up to do ads, it's greatly appreciated, as is your time and your effort and the fact that you're always the first one to respond to my emails.
Absolutely, Tracy. Thank you. Thank you for everything you do, too.
Thank you, Jeff.
A pleasure working with on Ad Promo with you and on the board in general, and your ability to easily transition different topics in a very friendly but commanding way is truly valuable, and we'll miss you very, very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Good luck, Jeff.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Any other new business?
This is Bill. Mr. Chairman, there's one item I thought maybe we could go over. NYRA has done better in terms of revenue than they had originally thought, because the handle has been up. And so they made an announcement a couple months ago that they were going to increase purchase for the second part of the Belmont meet, the fall meet. And as part of that announcement, they said retroactively they were going to also increase by a lesser amount the previous purse money won. So basically, the first half was going to be a light boost, and the second half of the meet was a big boost. I have spoken a little bit with Jeff and Tracy and Jill on this, and I just thought that maybe the trio wanted to report on how that's going and how that impacts awards.
Yes. We discussed this yesterday with Kyle, and he's going to help us put together a letter to respond to a couple of people who reached out to us and said we got bonus money for races run in the first half of the Belmont meet, and they wanted us to pay awards on them. And we were faced with a similar prospect last year with the Finger Lakes, except this year with NYRA the purses are much bigger, so the dollar amounts would be larger. Anyway, we did not pay breeder, owner, or stallion awards on the owner bonus money paid by Finger Lakes. And similarly, we will not do that for the bonus money paid out this year. And the reason is similar to the Jockey Club's reasoning, and the reason they don't go back and change the charts and the Equibase charts that you look up to see how much the purse was. Their theory is their charts reflect the amount of money that was available that day that the horses are running for and the amount of money distributed. That money that is given out, like, for example, in first place, the owners then have to pay 10% to the jockey, 10% to the trainer, whereas the owner's bonuses they receive, they will not have to pay owners or trainers and jockeys out of that, my understanding. So anyway, Kyle, you can jump in if you want to, but Kyle's going to help us create a letter so that it's not just me and Jill saying this is our philosophy, but explaining why we have that philosophy.
Yeah, so we spoke about this yesterday, and you know, I think that the principle has to be that the breeding fund, you know, pays its awards based upon a snapshot of the purse that was available as of the date of the race. And to the extent that that purse is supplemented later, you know, that just would not earn an that supplemental you know, money would not earn an award or an additional award. Otherwise, you know, you could imagine the chaos that would exist at the fund office if this were to happen, you know, numerous times. And in fact, I think that it's really just a principled reason that I think the fund should be in a position to pay its awards based upon the purse that existed at the time of the raise, period. And as long as it does that, it's in compliance with this program. I think that's number one. Number two, and this is not the driver, but I think it's also important, the administrative work that would be involved in having to go back and look at every race that is impacted by this supplement, and go through a manual process of determining the various awards that, you know, and calculating those additional payments, you know, would be monumental on the fund staff. So again, I don't think that's the driver, but I think that that's the secondary reason why it's just not a practical solution for the fund to go down that road.
Yeah, this is Jeff. I'll only chime in for a second here, and everything that's been stated, I think, is very important and very extremely accurate. The easiest way to look at this is not purse money, all right? In terms of earnings is the best way to handle it. This is not earnings money. So this was money that NARA essentially bonused or credited to accounts of owners, okay? And because of that, and that's how it's done for all the reasons that Kyle has mentioned, that's how the Jockey Club handles this, that's how the track handles this, it's absolutely how the fund should handle this. So that's the sense. These horses and stallions, their earnings aren't changing, right? They just, the owners of them received a credit or a bonus out of goodwill. So that's probably the layman's way of looking at the situation.
Okay, thanks.
Chairman, okay, I was going to say, I do have some old business to go over.
Go ahead.
We changed, fortunately, with the help of the Gaming Commission and Kyle and everybody, we were able to change our breedback rule and the rules about mares coming into the state if they're cost more than $50,000. So in the sales that we just had in November, 89 mares went through that sale. A few of them were already New York mares, resident mares, and they got a leave of absence. But 35 of them were above the price of $50,000. The average sale price of those mares was $100,542. 11 mares cost more than $100,000, and one mare in Fold Uncle Mo cost $425,000. So it looks like the gambit is working. We're getting new mares and we're getting better mares into the state. So I'll be giving you updates over the next few months as more sales take place and more mare movement cards come in, and we compare that against the sales results. The other update I have for you is I was very concerned this spring when stallion managers were telling me they expected to see a 10% drop in the number of mares bred. In fact, the fall off was about 7.5% mares fewer bred in New York this year than last. And this year, 50%, just under 50% of resident mares went out of state to be covered, whereas last year, 57% went out of state to be covered. That's one of the effects of COVID. The foal crop this year so far, we've counted 1,401 foals. In the next few weeks, the field team will be calling around to some of the smaller farms to see if maybe anybody's been missed. but what we do is we compare our count with the number reported to the jockey club. Sometimes we know about a foal that the jockey club doesn't. For example, if a foal, you know, dies in a couple of months, the owners, breeders may not tell the jockey club about it, but they do tell our field team members. So that's it for my update.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bill. I just wanted to say that the Ad Promo Committee had just recently supported aftercare through the appropriate promo means, which Tracy and Jill really helped engineer. And if one of them would just give us a one or two sentence one, the money was a lot less than usual. No surprise.
Yeah, we just had a little over $20,000 that we gave to aftercare in the state. Each entity that received money is a group that's been approved by the Thoroughbred Aftercare Association, which is the industry standard. They look at the number of horses you have. They come in, they look at your books, and they examine your paddocks and make sure that you have, you know, proper facilities to take care of horses. We're sorry that we only had that small amount of money left, but over the past few years, we've probably given close to $1 million in aftercare. Well over a million when you count like what NYFA gives. NYTV has provided some aftercare support. And it's very important, I think, to the industry. One of the barriers to ownership is the negative opinion that some members of the public have about what happens to a racehorse at the end of its career. And I think that the fund, my company, that we've really done a lot to raise the bar about how horses should be respected when they've completed their time to the starting gate. And certainly the groups, led by places like Rerun and Akendale Thoroughbred Rescue, they have just done such a great job of taking horses in, evaluating them, and then making adoptions, which the horses can continue in their adopted state under a contract from the Aftercare Association, such that if the people can't care for it anymore, it goes back to the organization and they will find another home for it. So thank you to the board for all the support you've provided to Aftercare.
Tracy, this is... Sorry, Chairman, this is Jeff. Can you or Jill, when you have a chance here as the weeks unfold, send an email or to the board with some of those metrics around that you mentioned around the mare movement and foal crop, etc. Because that's very good information that I think will be very useful for everybody going forward. And the 1,400 foals, that's everyone should realize that's a pretty significant drop. You know, that's a 12% drop, roughly, if I'm doing, you know, short math. But so that's why I think we should certainly look at a lot of those numbers. The board should certainly look at those numbers going forward.
So what do you think of the numbers of 89 mares coming through the sales and 35 of them being over that $50,000 mark?
I think it's interesting. You know, I think 35 mares being bought for over 50 grand in this year was honestly more than I probably thought it was going to be. If this year wasn't the year of COVID, I think that number would have been much, much higher. It certainly would have been much higher. So it's, you know, I'm kind of indifferent about it, is my initial reaction to that is, you know, the 89 mares being bought that were resident or not coming, it'd be nice. It'd be interesting to see what the data is behind them, what they sell for, what was the median. Here's something for you guys to think about going forward. What was the median price or average price of those 89 that are coming to New York versus the ones that fall under the category of the new rule, 50,000 or higher? Because then I think it's interesting though, and this is, you know, my parting gift to everyone. I think that this is probably one of the more important things to watch over the next 6 months, you know, is really the analytics behind the market and bloodstock market and how, you know, people are reacting to the new rule, basically. You know, is it working? Is it the right price point, which is the most important part? Because at the end of the day, you change the rule to increase the mare count, and if the mare count isn't increasing because of the rule change, you honestly should look at that figure. So, anyways, I think that that's an assignment for the next year, basically.
Thank you, Jeff. And Tracy, include an update at each meeting so you can bring us up to date on what's going on with the program. Are there any other items, anything else that you would like to discuss before we...
Chairman, this is Jill. If I could just add in, thinking ahead to 2021, we had back in the, I think it was the August meeting, we had approved the budget of, you know, for 2021 with the thought that it could be amended later on. We're almost in 2021 now, and the only thing that I would like to mention to the board and maybe have some discussion if there's any questions is in 2021 we're assuming that things kind of go back to normal. I think that might not be the case during the first quarter, but I am optimistic that as we go on in the year there will be, you know, big improvements. With that being said, we currently have a holdback rate of 50%, which I think is too high for 2021. I would like to go back to our previous rate of holdback, which is 10% for the January. You know, we pay out our first 2020 awards that go out in the beginning of March. So my thought is if we set up the holdback to be a 10%, with the thought that even with this year, as bad as it is, we're still going to get pretty close to that 10%, you know, to just that 10% holdback. And then if things look really dire and I, you know, don't think that we're going to be able to maintain that 10%, then we have maybe a pass around or a discussion before the March awards are, is that January, February awards are paid out in March. So I just kind of, does anybody have any feelings one way or the other about the holdback rate for 2021?
This is Jeff. I you know, another parting gift is, I guess I could say whatever I want now, but I think that it would be very prudent and a good message for the industry to pay out as much money as you can, right? So if we're holding on to way too much, which clearly we are, because the circumstances have changed, it would make sense to you know, scale that 50% down. So, Jill, I mean, you know these numbers better than anybody, and you're on the pulse every day. I think that you're the person that's going to make the best recommendation on what that should be. So those are my 2 cents. I think that, you know, it'll be a good message going into the winter, too, and through the first quarter to take that 50% and scale it back downward to a more reasonable number.
Mr. Chairman, go
ahead. Yes, sir.
I agree that it's a great message, but if we, let's, in reviewing the situation we now have, the breeders are going to be getting some bigger checks because we're going to be paying out some of the money that we withheld, that we actually have extra, I believe. I'm just concerned that the COVID environment will, just for the first quarter of 21, still be pretty active and pretty devastating to the industry, and perhaps we will see a renewed shutdown of casinos and things like that. So I think it's nice to have, to go back to 10%, but I think there could be something prudently in between, because they are going to get checks, that much more checks than they expected because of the extra money we have in our accounts are going to distribute. I think 10% is really nice, but I'm just worried that there's going to be another lockdown, another and we're just beginning to see the results of Thanksgiving on the numbers of people with cases in New York area, et cetera. And we're just gonna, and then the holidays are coming. I just feel like it's, you know, the first quarter is gonna, could look slightly ugly before I start, the vaccines are really distributed. So I'm in the camp of maybe 20, maybe withholding more like 25% just for the first quarter, and with all good intention, move back to 10% in the second quarter. This is my two cents. It's not my parting gift.
understood, and I think right now it's something we really, it's hard to anticipate. As I stated, these awards would not be paid out until early March. We could defer it until the board meets at the end of March, and then at that time we would have a much better idea of what's happened. It's just that historically the fund has been very good with paying their awards on a timely, you know, every 2 months, the first week, the following, you know, a month, those awards are sent out. I hesitate to hold those awards until the board meets again. So maybe at this point the conversation is, you know, we don't really determine what the holdback rate is until we have a better idea of what's going on for 2021. Again, I don't know. My thought was, let's do it at the 10%. And I understand that, yes, the first quarter I think is going to be difficult, but I also feel that the last three quarters, or definitely the last two quarters, things will stabilize and become a lot more normal. And because our awards are paid out based on the full 12 months, I hate to penalize the people in that first 2 months just because those were the bad months, when we really anticipate additional revenues coming in later on. That being said, it's all a guess. Who really knows what the future will bring? It's a budget number, and you know, my thought is, let's do the 10%, but if it doesn't look realistic on the beginning of March when those that amount would be paid out, then we revisit it, maybe have another telephone, a conference call with the board, and discuss changing that ahead of time. And then this way we would be able to give everybody numbers to look at to decide what the rate should be.
Right, but I, my concern is the public's view of what we're doing and the what people's expectations are, and I rather give them a nice surprise than to disappoint them. And people, and if we tell people they can budget for, you know, instead of 50% holdback, we are giving them great news that it's only 25% holdback or what have you, and then we surprise them with a meeting saying, oh, we can pay out everything but 10%. I think that the public that we serve will be in a better position. I hate to tell everyone we're paying everything but 10% and then have to go back and change that. I know they might understand, but I don't know how many more disappointments do we really want to deliver in this very difficult year. So just a thought. I that's my 25%.
No, I think it's a good point. So Tracy, just so I understand the timing of this, the January and February awards, that money is paid in March, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. So the first quarter, or what really is not the full quarter, but the first quarter's checks would go out in March based on what happens this winter. And at the same time, the hold back money from this year that we're going to give everyone back, they don't actually get that until March 2, right?
Correct. Yes, correct. Yeah,
okay.
When we get up,
so
we don't have the final numbers till then.
Right.
But
so
I,
at the end of the day, go ahead.
I think if we said 10%, and Jill was looking at the numbers, I think it's, you know, I just think our public are people who, it's not like they're just reading press releases. People who've got to pay bills. They've got to pay board bills, training bills, pay bills. And like you did last year, we had to increase the holdback as the year went on, which we can do. But, I mean, 10%, everybody's used to 10%. So they look at that as good news. And I know Joe McMahon has told me that many people like the holdback because it's like almost like a forced savings for them, and they look forward to getting that in the next year.
This is Bill. I'd just like to comment. I think there's really good points made on, you know, both sides of this. Certainly Jill trying to, and Tracy trying to keep the breeders in business by not holding on to money. And I think Phil's thing about COVID is now rearing its ugly head again. And if something should, you know, bad should happen and the casino or racino closes or racing stops, of course, if racing stops, we all have to pay. But here's my thought. Well, what about, you know, meeting in the middle? What if you kept 15% back, which would still be pretty aggressive in terms of, you know, if there's a dark day, and it would show that we're trying to be cautious, but at the same time trying to put money back in people's pockets, and if not 15, then 20. But I hear Phil, and I kind of feel that way. But I also trust Jill. She's very conservative. So, it's, I mean, we don't know. That would be my thought. It's 15, and if not that, 20. What does everybody think of that?
I think that... I'm talking a lot from my last meeting. I think that it'd be, you know, prudent for us, I keep using the same word, for perhaps Jill to, I mean, we're making a decision based on like a little verbiage, right? Perhaps there's, Jill, you could put together some numbers, right? And, or, you know, some type of data or a projection. And then the board can, you know, look at that and make a decision on what a new withholding may or may not be, right? Based on the thought process that, you know, people want to change it or reduce it. We just aren't sure what we're comfortable reducing it to.
Right. I think the point remains that we don't, it just, nothing will stop us from paying out 10% if we have the money. We want to pay it out. I'm just saying, in order to manage the expectations in people's budgets in their minds of what they're going to be getting, I'm just saying that as the, to be responsible board members, we need to you know, manage the expectations of hundreds and hundreds of people getting awards, and we can still send them 10%. That would be wonderful if we have the money, but if we don't have the money, they won't be as disappointed, and they won't have depended upon for something that we have to put off. So I'm just being conservative about this. I think 20% is fine, and nothing stops us from having a meeting later in the first quarter where Jill gives us the good news. We can pay 10%, right. And we'll all just both pay it.
Right.
This is Jill. I just think that at this time, it's probably, there's too many unknowns to really determine a rate. So maybe what the thing to do is just to defer this conversation, and we do another conference call or discussion in the end of February as we get a little bit closer and we see what's happened these next couple of months.
I disagree with that. I think that's not smart. I don't think it's good. I'm going to say I'm disagreeing with you, and that's a very conservative approach. Is that because we're going to be paying out in the money that we have held back, we now have a history. We do have a number that the public will understand, and they see that we're not, the 50%, they know the 50% is too high now. We all know it's too high now. And the breeders deserve to have our best guesstimates between December 8th and the future. So I think we have to announce some kind of alteration that shows that we're all up to date on our understanding of the current situation that involves them so intrinsically. So I think we need to make some kind of percentage announcement, as you wished to before, and I think we can give them better news later.
Yeah, I agree with that. themselves. I do. And you know what? The more I think about it, I think that your original number of 25% makes the most sense because you're cutting it right in half, right? And we know 25 is probably still too high too, but come February 28th, you can take that 25 and turn it into 10 when there's, if there's no shutdown, et cetera, mm-hmm. or pause.
So there's a good chance that we'll lose the casino money.
I think this is a great discussion, and you know, the 25 works for me. You could, before the first checks go out, if things are wonderful, you could reduce it. The problem is the COVID, you know, the vaccine's not here yet, blah blah blah, and I think that we want to be consistent. We don't want to start out with it at 1% and then change it again. That's a headache, and it, again, stability in a program is important. So we want to be conservative to a certain extent, as Phil's suggesting, but we want to be quote unquote aggressive in that we want to give people their money. So and I think I agree with it. We should make an announcement coming out of this meeting. It doesn't have to be today, but before January 1. Before anything is earned, before the January sales, the February sales, we should come out with some kind of, look, here's what we're going to do for going forward. And, you know, if 25 is what the group wants to do, fine. To me, it's between, for me, it would be between 15, 20, or 25. I wouldn't go to 10. I think that saying it's business as usual, it's not business as usual. And, 50, obviously, it's high, but what do we know? We didn't want to get caught short. That was the deal. You don't want to get caught short. If this thing really blows up and the casino closes, but racing continues, I mean, we all know the dynamics. So I think this group right now, here today, if they could, should either pick one of three, 15, 20, or 25, and just make an announcement. That's my two cents.
Well, we have Jeff and Phil agreeing on 25. I can live with 25. Is there anyone that would be opposed to having a motion to, I guess it would be to increase the pullback to 25%, going from 25, from 50% to 25%?
Fine with me.
Bill, you want to make a motion?
Yes, Leo, I'd like to make that motion. Thank you.
Go ahead, Phil. This is your baby. You make the motion.
Any no, second?
Thank you.
That's second.
Second by Kitchen Sample. Any further discussion on the motion? Kyle, you got the motion, the wording?
I do.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And opposed? The motion carries.
This is Jill again. I just want to thank you. I know this was kind of a last minute, and again, it's because there's so many unknowns at this time. So, you know, I'm fine with the 25%. It's very conservative, and I like conservative. So thank you for doing this kind of last minute, and we'll look at it again the end of February, early March, before those awards come out to see if anything's changed significantly.
Jill, it's quite understandable. These are very, very difficult times. So I think we have to be flexible. I think Phil, Jeff, Dr. Wilmot, you all made excellent points about the advantages of doing it today. And again, not set in stone. If there are big changes in circumstances, we'll address it again. But if there's no further business, there's no further questions, I want to wish everybody a happy and safe holiday. And hopefully the next meeting will be together.
Mr.
That would be wonderful.
You had mentioned yesterday you might want to do an executive session. Have you changed your mind?
Yeah, I think we'd have to call in at a different number. And I think we can deal with this issue. Barry, I think we can deal with this issue at the March meeting, correct?
I'll check with
I'll check with Tracy. I believe so. But if we need to do something prior to that date, we could do a special session just on the concern. All right?
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you. It's really more of a timing issue than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone on quite long today, and I think it was a very good meeting, but I don't want to extend it another unnecessarily. So
we'll
discuss the other issues at the next meeting or prior thereto if we need. Again, thank you, everybody, and hopefully we'll all get together in person in 2021.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you.